Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host, and this is MJ Network. MJ after my sister, Marcia Joyce. And this is going to be absolutely a blockbuster show because this book is, like, so fantastic. And the best part is, it came out today, and I actually posted my review today. I didn't forget. And the 5 stars are on Amazon. They loved it. What can I say? So, Brian Freeman, good morning. How are you? And welcome to MJ Network. I love this book. It was so good. I read it in one day. Not even.
Well, thank you, Fran. It is always great to talk to you. I'm so glad you loved the new book.
I actually loved it. And the sad part is that, not sad for you, said that I had a pile of 25 books, literally. And then when this one came, I said, oh, forget it. I'm just going to sit there and read it. You can't put it down. I mean, literally couldn't put it down. It's like I had the chills just reading it. So when you decided to create this, the prologue, I felt like whatever was happening to the poor character was happening to me. How did you create this? It was like it's happening in real time. And did you have to do research in order to do it? Because that was scary.
Yeah. And of course, what's interesting about the prologue in this book is that it's technically the prologue to a different book, because the heroine of Thief River Falls is a woman named Lisa Power, and she, as I am, is a thriller writer, and she actually has written a best-selling book called Thief River Falls, and so there's all sorts of wonderful little connections there, but the prologue to my book is actually the prologue to her book, and the question is, how does that start to sort of filter into things that go on in the rest of the novel? But, you know, it's written in the present tense, which I don't usually do, but apparently Lisa does, and I think it, you know, it gives that immediacy to the prologue, and, you know, I think all of these kinds of action sequences, I mean, they're about activating what I call the 6 senses. I mean, it's one thing to have all of your 5 senses activated so that you can feel and touch and taste and hear and smell everything happening around you. But there's kind of this additional layer in every scene that I want to bring out for the reader, and that's the emotions and the memories and that everything else that goes into what you see and what you feel. And if you can trigger that in the reader, then I think a scene really comes to life.
I did. I got the chills reading it, let me tell you. And then literally, if you close your eyes, you could actually see it. And then you get more scared. No, seriously. I did. I go like, I thought maybe it was just me. And I go like, oh my God, this is like giving me the chills. Am I going to read the rest of the book? I go, I got to find out what happened. So Lisa is a loner, and she lives in an isolated place, and she wrote this novel. Why does she have such a huge fan base, and why did she feel that she had to live in a place where nobody else was? She's actually practically alone.
Yeah, she's up in a distant corner of northwestern Minnesota, and she had grown up in the town of Thief River Falls, and then moved about an hour north of there to an even smaller town called Lake Bronson. You know, the funny thing is that when I wrote this book, I used the real town of Thief River Falls, Minnesota as the setting. I have found that a lot of people don't realize that Thief River Falls is a real place. They'll write to me and say, you made that place up, didn't you? No, I really didn't. Thief River Falls, it's absolutely a real town. In fact, I visited there, must be 22 years ago, when I was doing a freelance article for a business magazine in the Twin Cities. And I loved the drama and the remoteness of the area. And I kind of filed it away in my head that I wanted to find just the right story to go along with that setting. And I finally found it with this book. And, you know, and in terms of isolation, the thing Lisa is she's a writer, and we writers sort of always struggle, I think, with the external responsibilities of the job. I'm a little different in that my mom has always said I'm a little bit of a ham at heart, and so I love going out and doing the events and doing interviews and chatting with folks and talking to readers. But there are a lot of writers that they struggle with that, because writing is such an introverted, introspective kind of profession that it doesn't necessarily lend itself to people that would feel equally comfortable going out and kind of, schmoozing with the public. And I think Lisa's one of those that she's writing inside her head, and that's where, everything's taking place for her. But going out and talking to people and dealing with, with the sort of the impact of her fame is much more of a challenge for her.
I agree. I have been interviewed so many people, I forgot how many. And a lot of times when it's the first time they've ever been interviewed, you could tell they're nervous on the other end of the phone, at which point it's time for Fran to crack, say something funny or just lighten it up. And I know I can understand me. I don't own a room that I can. My husband uses his computer, so he's constantly in there, so I can't use mine. So if I'm typing a review and it comes out wrong, I typed it on my phone, people, on my notepad, and then I email it to myself, and then I fix it. So I mean, I sit there and I do it by myself. So Lisa seems to be ill at ease with people, and even when she goes to town to talk to people and they praise her, she seems so ill at ease. How come? She doesn't feel comfortable with people. I know how that feels at times. Especially if you know someone or you're so famous that you can't even handle that. So how come she's afraid to talk, she's afraid of the public, basically?
I don't know if it's fear or if it's simply that sort of social anxiety. I don't think she's particularly comfortable in groups. And I think that, at heart with Lisa, there's a certain degree of insecurity. And I mean, I think that's very common for we writers. I mean, we're always dealing with inferiority complexes. I mean, I always tell aspiring writers that the biggest, the biggest enemy you're going to face is inside your own head, because I think every writer deals with that sense of inferiority and that voice inside your head telling you, oh, you're never going to be able to do this. You can't make it work. This novel's never going to work. And I'll tell you, I mean, I've written more than 20 novels at this point, and that voice is still there. I mean, I have to struggle and deal with that every day on every chapter as well, and I think it's just a part of the writer's life. And so Lisa has had a tremendous amount of success, but I think in the case for a lot of writers, when they have that, they're always sort of they've still got that voice inside kind of doubting themselves and saying, well, you don't deserve that, and so I think when people are telling her, oh gosh, we love your book and we love you, it just makes her uncomfortable. And it's sort of that unusual circumstance for writers that they, they end up having relationships with fans, but they don't really, the fans don't really know who they are. I mean, they know their books, but they don't necessarily know them as people. And I think for someone like Lisa, who's been through a lot of struggle in her life, she struggles with the idea that people, treat her as if they know her, and yet she kind of wants to protect parts of herself because these people really don't know who she is and what's going on.
Yeah, well, she doesn't have the support of a family or a friend or anybody, basically, whereas most people, writers do. They, at least they have a family member or somebody that helps them to edit or helps them to read it or helps them tell them this is horrible, this is good, this is great. So I know. I lost my sister 10 years ago, and I lost my person that would criticize me like you wouldn't believe. That story doesn't make sense. You need to fix that. And I missed that. So tell us about her family history. Why she was estranged from her brother.
Well, Lisa has a very difficult family history. I mean, she grew up in a family with multiple siblings, and she lived with her parents in this little house in Thief River Falls, and never really moved out in a lot of ways. I mean, when she ultimately got engaged, she ended up renting a house sort of right next door to her parents, where she could look out the window and you know, see her mom in the house next door and listen to her mom singing through the open window. But a terrible string of tragedies struck in the space of just a few months. And basically fate took away pretty much her entire family except her twin brother. And so she lost, her parents lost her other brothers and suddenly goes from having this large, you know, supportive family to having sort of no one in her life. And it is devastating for her. And they call it the dark star. It's like it's a physical presence. I mean, it's like there's some force out there that has taken away, you know, her entire family. And so for Lisa, who starts as, I think, someone that's not necessarily all that strong in terms of, you know, her psyche, because she had been engaged and her fiance had died in fighting a fire in California. And so, you know, she starts with that kind of tragedy and then a few years later finds herself facing this terrible, terrible string of events. And I think it completely upends her world as you'd expect in a circumstance like that. But it means that she doesn't kind of know, you know, what's real in her life and how it sort of upends everything and leaves her wondering how to move forward.
I like that dark star part because that's how I feel. See, everybody feels sometimes like it's all been taken away and there's like a black cloud up there. I know. It gets you after a while.
Yes, exactly.
Purdue is the other character in the book. How do we meet him, and why does she feel so overprotective?
The character of Purdue, this 10-year-old boy,
he
shows up in the middle of the night outside Lisa's very remote farmhouse and doesn't remember, you know, who he is or how he got there, but he says that he witnessed some terrible things, and Lisa discovers that, you know, that Purdue thinks that that the police could have been involved in what he saw, and so it makes her reluctant to immediately turn the boy over to the police. And the boy doesn't remember his name, and so Lisa names the boy Purdue and uses the French word for loss as his name. But of course, there's a lot more to it than that for Lisa, because in her book, Thief River Falls, there's also a young boy that's at the heart of that story, and that boy in her book is named Purdue. And so right from the get-go, you can see that Lisa is kind of taking this boy, this who shows up at her house, and sort of seeing him as, in many ways, sort of the hero of her book. And so as a result, I think feels this tremendous responsibility to rescue this boy and make sure that he's safe. And of course, this is coming, you know, on the heels of the Dark Star. And so, I mean, Lisa has lost so much in her life, is, you know, absolutely defiantly determined that she is going to make sure that this boy stays safe.
She feels that this unusual responsibility. I get that. That's really scary, but we won't tell anybody why. Nope, we can't do that. So we have Purdue meets Laurel, and he doesn't like her at all. And he says that her friendship with her is bad. Why is that? And that she's not to be trusted. And I won't tell you if I liked her or not. Not really.
Lisa is, you know, she's alone with Purdue in this remote farmhouse, and she doesn't feel like she can trust the authorities because she's concerned about what the boy has told her that he saw. And so the only person she feels that she can consult about this is a friend of hers named Laurel March. And so Laurel, you know, Laurel comes over and Lisa's telling her everything that's going on, and Laurel is sort of trying to help Lisa through this. But right from the get-go, you know, Purdue doesn't seem to have the same, you know, warm feelings about Laurel that Lisa does as a friend. And Purdue seems to think that Laurel knows who he is, but is keeping that a secret. And so I think it's you don't quite know what to think about, you know, Laurel from the beginning of the book. Is can you trust her? Can you not trust her? It's I think it's sort of, you know, unclear and unclear, mm-hmm. I think, throughout the book. What role does she really play in what's going on, and what is her relationship to Lisa and Purdue? And of course, one of the fun things about Laurel as a character is that a lot of times what I will do is I will offer up character names to nonprofit organizations and let them do fundraisers where donors can bid on the idea of having their name used as a character in a book. And so the character of Laurel March is actually one of those. So there really is a real Laurel March in northern Minnesota, actually, who bid on the opportunity to be a character in this book. And of course, I never tell folks, you know, are you going to be, you know, a good character, a bad character, a victim, a killer? You have to wait and see how it translates into the book itself. In the previous book, I had a lovely young woman who won a raffle to be a character in a book as a fundraiser for the Duluth Library, and I killed her off in terrible fashion in the very first chapter of the book, and she keeps coming back throughout the rest of the book as people reference her, but I didn't give her long to enjoy life inside the book. I just killed her off quick.
I want to be a bad character in somebody's book. I was, actually. Yes, Karen Vaughn made me a character in her book. She made me a publisher that stole somebody's ideas and used them on my own. But she didn't kill me off because I told her I wanted to come back and do some other evil. It was fun.
Well,
I always wanted to be a character in somebody's book, but being too good is no fun because I'm good. So I always wanted to be evil and bad and the nasty reviewer. What can I say?
Well, you know, and in a lot of ways, I think a lot of writers would tell you that the bad characters tend to be the most fun to write because you can get away with so much for them. You can just sort of let your id come out and you know, sail through the novel. So bad characters typically are
sometimes
very,
they're the most popular character. Sometimes they're the most popular character in the book, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's true.
So wanting to keep him safe, she has to make a very critical decision. So she goes out and leaves him alone. And that's not, I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea. She wants to go out and take down some very powerful people. So she leaves him there. And then what happens? Because she, like, is worried about him, but yet he feels that he could stay by himself. But I don't know if that's a good idea.
Well, and there's obviously a lot of stuff going on here, but you know, Lisa knows that that people are looking for Purdue, and as she starts trying to figure out what really happened to this boy, you know, she's also trying to keep him under wraps because she believes that, you know, as soon as people know that, you know, Purdue is with her, that the word's going to get back, and they're going to be tracking him down through her, so she's trying to keep him hidden at the same time that she's also trying to find out what really happened to this boy and how does this all fit together as part of this conspiracy up there. And so it's a tough situation for Lisa because she's trying to find out what's really going on here. And yet at the same time, she feels every time she leaves and Purdue is not with her, she feels like she's going to lose him forever. She's going to go back and he'll have disappeared.
Well, who is Dennis and why does he want to get rid of her? Or supposedly want to get rid of her?
Dennis is the county attorney for Pennington County in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it is, but I think readers who read my books will figure out pretty quickly that for some reason, I guess I have a thing about county attorneys. They always seem to be rather slimy characters in my books. You figure in the Stride series, the county attorneys are, you know, Dan Erickson has been a thorn in Stride's side, literally going back all the way to my first book, Immoral, and he was the county attorney in St. Louis County, and it seems like everywhere I go, I'm doing bad things to county attorneys, and Thief River Falls is no exception. Dennis is a difficult, curmudgeonly character in this book, and clearly has a problem with Lisa, and it's not entirely clear how far he'd necessarily go to sort of, you know, protect his secrets. And of course, it's funny because When Thief River Falls first, it came out in ebook last month and as part of the Amazon First Reads program, I got an email from a woman living in Thief River Falls, and her father was the retired county attorney for Pennington County, and she was laughing about the fact that she was looking forward to telling her father that I'd made him kind of a baddie in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have throughout the novel, the part that was really interesting is the two voices that you show. Throughout the novel, we hear Lisa's inner voice rationalizing her actions. So how did you create the inner dialogue? Because we wonder if she's mentally disturbed. And then you create the dialogue for Purdue as a bright, insightful 10-year-old who places his faith in a stranger. There's a special bond. So how did you do that? Because I felt that he really trusted her, and yet she didn't seem to trust herself.
Yeah, that was probably the toughest part of the book to write, was to really kind of capture not only Purdue's dialogue as a child, but also the relationship between Lisa and Purdue, and to be able to capture kind of the need that Lisa had to be able to rescue this boy coming in the wake of the Dark Star and everything she's lost, and yet the fact that in doing so, Lisa herself is not entirely stable because she's obviously gone through some tremendous tragedies, and so you sort of have to ask yourself, is she the best person to be, sort of steering this rescue forward? And yet there is this genuine, really strong bond that builds quickly between Lisa and the boy, and so I went over and over the dialogue in these cases as I was editing the book, because I wanted that just to have the right tone and to have the right feel between these two characters, because ultimately that relationship is at the heart of the book. And it's a balancing act when you're dealing with the dialogue of a child, because you want to sort of capture some of the immaturity of a child's dialogue, but you also don't want to go too far over that and have it feel caricature-ish. So it was kind of finding just that right balance of who Purdue is as a character and making sure that his dialogue is kind of authentic for that particular voice.
Now, she likes to be alone and isolated, but Purdue is afraid. He thinks about these men that he remembers as a child, and he's afraid. What does he remember, and what is he afraid? Why is he so afraid? I mean, I can feel his fear, literally feel it.
Yeah. Well, when Purdue shows up at Lisa's house, he's sort of made an escape from somewhere and doesn't really remember the details because he's been hit in the head. He's kind of the Jason Bourne of Thief River Falls, in that he doesn't really remember exactly what happened to him. Although as the book goes on, Lisa starts to wonder, does Purdue actually remember more of the details than he's letting on? And is he in fact sort of concealing the truth from Lisa because he doesn't want to tell her what's actually happening? Purdue's story is that he witnessed a terrible crime, terrible, terrible crime, and is convinced that there were police officers that were part of this, and so because of this, Lisa is very distrustful of the police coming to her door and doesn't want to simply offer up the boy into their hands, because she's not sure whether in fact she's offering the boy up to the people that have committed the very crime that Purdue believes he witnessed.
That's scary. So what about the hospital staff?
Well, Laurel March is a doctor and works at the local hospital, and Lisa herself used to be a nurse and used to work at the hospital as well. So it's sort of like the hospital is constantly drawing Lisa back, and she thinks that Purdue may possibly have escaped from the hospital there, and so she wants to know, how did he get there and what was really going on that brought him there. But she again is not sure that she can necessarily trust everyone around her. I mean, Lisa is it sort of feeds into the introverted nature of her personality, is that she's very reluctant to sort of put her fate in the hands of anyone else, and she thinks she has to do this all herself, that she has to kind of carry the entire burden on her shoulders. And the difficulty of that is that she's in a situation where she kind of finds the walls closing in on her from every side.
Yeah, well, I can almost feel it, that she's sitting in a room and she just feels like she can't breathe, or that everything is going to come in on top of her. And then she just wants to escape and just fly away somewhere, but she has no way to go. That's what's scary. That's like crazy. So Lisa's brother wants to help her, but yet, what about her brother might give us more insight into how she handles or does not handle relationships? She's not very close with him, is she, for some reason? She's not close to anybody.
Yeah, well, you know, I enjoyed creating the character of Lisa's brother, and he's her twin brother, there seems to be a real special bond between them, and her brother has always had the belief that he could kind of hear Lisa's thoughts and feel what Lisa is feeling, and that really drives his behavior for better and for worse, because in the wake of the Dark Star, I think that Lisa's overwhelming sense of grief affected her brother as well, and sort of doubled up on what he was feeling in his own grief. And the result of that is that their relationship has been sort of, you know, severed in the wake of the Dark Star, and yet her brother can sort of feel that Lisa is going through some sort of, you know, horrible experience, and he's you know, not living in the area anymore, and yet he feels as if Lisa needs him and is struggling with what can he do and how can he kind of get back into his sister's life. And so I really enjoyed creating that relationship too, and sort of, you know, creating the bond between these twins, because realistically, I mean, her brother is kind of the last member of her family and sort of Lisa's last hope for being able to kind of find a way out of this situation.
The situations in this book are so real life, you would really think that they could happen right now. The scary part is that you say, well, okay, this is going to happen. This might happen. This might not happen. It's amazing because you feel like, okay, I'm part of this. I felt like I was part of the book the whole time, seriously.
That's very much what I was going for. If I wanted people to be immediately kind of grabbed by the propulsion of the narrative and to be, you know, following through on this sort of quest that Lisa has to rescue Purdue and find out what really happened to this boy. And I wanted that to really just sort of take the reader I've heard from so many people that have ended up sort of reading the book in one sitting. And that's very much what I was going for, is that, you know, once you sort of get engaged with Lisa's quest, that you can't stop reading until you find out what's really going on here.
I know you're beginning to wonder which side is real and who's real and who's not. So,
yeah.
Are there a few more characters? I have the book in front of me. I didn't throw. Nobody's getting it because this is autographed, people. Too bad. You get your own. I'm not doing that. There's a law. If it's not autographed, I give it away to somebody. Usually, it's my dermatologist who says you can't come without books. No, seriously, that's the rule. Dr. M says you can't come without books, so tomorrow I will bring you books just to visit, just to bring you books. It's the truth.
Good.
It's hysterical. Who is Jillian? Who is Jillian and who is Noah? I'm looking through the book and I didn't include them.
Well, Noah, of course, is Lisa's brother, and he is...
Yeah, Noah's his brother, yeah.
He's living in Fargo, so he's you know, a little ways away from where Lisa is now, and that distance is kind of the symbol of their separation. But Noah has a personality that's not dissimilar to Lisa's, and yet he has, he has found a woman in his life that is helping kind of take him out of his shell and just, you know, sort of deal with, you know, his tragedies, which is something that Lisa does not have. And I think it's it's his, you know, sort of quirky, fun fiance, and I really enjoy her as a character. I think it's it's her influence on Noah that kind of enables him to really start, you know, reaching out to Lisa, and I think she's kind of the voice of reason in his head, and in turn of kind of telling him, you know, telling him the obvious truth that he's a little bit reluctant to see.
That's rare in a girlfriend. It's rare somebody like that. Usually we just say, forget it, don't worry about it. Most people wouldn't even care, unfortunately. So she goes to town, and everybody makes this big fuss about her because they really want more of her books. So how does she react to that? Because she really is talented. But we'll get to that. There's something very interesting that you do that nobody else has done in a while, and I won't say who it is right now, but she still prefers isolation, yet everybody, she walks into the store, and the minute they see her, it's like, oh, my God. It's very hard to handle popularity.
Yeah.
She can't seem to deal with that. That's hard for her. I know. Me, on the other hand, I would just say, yes, I'm wonderful. No, I wouldn't. I would probably wouldn't know. It's hard. It's hard, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, that is kind of the inherent contradiction that that a lot of writers face is that they don't necessarily deal well with that, and they don't necessarily believe it when people tell them that. And as I say, I think that kind of gets back to the basic insecurity that sort of is at the heart of a lot of writers' consciousness, and I truly put myself in that as well. So I think Lisa is. Lisa is certainly an introvert, does not deal well with people generally, and so sort of getting back out into the world with Purdue is, I mean, she's got the stress of being worried about what's happening with this child, and at the same time, suddenly she's kind of reemerging from the shell of where she's been, kind of closeted away because of the Dark Star, and she's not necessarily dealing with it well. I mean, she's really struggling with kind of how can she relate to the world, and so, you know, all the people that she meets are very, you know, innocently, you know, trying to help her and you know, telling her that they you know, love her books and love her and support her, and they're all well intentioned, but it's very hard for Lisa to embrace that. I mean, she kind of, you know, can't trust it and sort of shuts it out.
I know it's scary. So, Dennis, what else happens to Dennis within the book? Because he's got more to say besides being the attorney. He gets into it even more. Yeah, he does. And nice, like, oh my God.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, a lot of secrets going on with these characters and you know, what seems to be happening on the surface. Of course, you know, this is the Brian Freeman book, so you never are entirely sure whether what you can trust what you see.
Yeah,
and things may be a little bit different below the surface. But you know, Dennis himself is clearly struggling with some kind of grief, and his relationship with his own wife is strained, and she's gone off the wagon as an alcoholic and is drinking again, and so there's a sympathy for this character. I mean, he seems as if he's you know, potentially guilty of some evil things in certainly in Lisa's mind, and yet I think you feel a degree of sympathy for this character because it's obvious that he's had a lot of struggle in his life too.
That is scary. It's almost as if he and Lisa are the same. They both have difficulties with relationships, and they both have difficulties dealing with people. So I'm surprised
there is scary. There is a lot of similarity between them, and I think that is you know, something that, you know, probably neither one initially would want to accept about the other. But yeah, I mean, they're both kind of stubborn, and they both you know, it's easy for them to bang heads, and that's partly because they share some similarities, no doubt about it.
So what happens when she leaves Purdue alone and then she comes back? Where does she find him? Because he feels like that there's somebody out there. He's afraid he's going to get hurt. He's afraid they're going to get him.
Yeah. Well, and you know, ultimately Lisa winds up back in Thief River Falls. It's like she's trying to escape Thief River Falls, and yet it's kind of pulls her back in. She's trying to fly away, and yet you know, a storm forces her back into the town. It's like the town grabs hold of her and won't let go. And maybe it's because she needs to face some realities about who she is and about you know, what her life has been doing. So she winds up at her family home, where her parents were, where her brothers were, and of course she's trying to keep Purdue safe, and yet at the same time she's dealing with this tidal wave of memories and grief that comes along with being back in this house where everything, you know, bad happens to her, and it's sort of kind of overwhelming everything in her life as she tries to juggle these you know, intensely emotional and terrifying situations.
It is scary. I don't know how many people would be able to, and yet you wonder exactly is what happening really happening, or isn't it happening? So if the psychiatrist, happening?
Yeah.
Now she we have more about Laurel too, because she really doesn't trust her, and she actually confronts her at one point, and that's like. And this is supposed to be her close friend. I know she works in the hospital. What exactly does she do in the hospital?
Well, I'm not going to tell you that out loud because that gives a few things. But it's suffice it to say that the relationship, the friendship between Laurel and Lisa is important to the book, because again, I think it is so hard for Lisa to trust anyone, and she's been so wounded by things in her life that she can't open up and let anyone else in, and there are people around that theoretically want to help her, but Lisa isn't sure whether to trust that help or whether it's in fact sort of one more element in this conspiracy against her. So questioning that friendship is kind of a big part of what, you know, Lisa has to go through.
Before I forget, I was very surprised and honored to get an email from none other than New York Times author Robert Jaconi, who sent the book a couple of days ago that I read real fast. And on Monday he will be talking about A Cold Trail, Tracy Crosswhite book. Oh my God, is that good. On the 19th, because Fran's taken a few days off, the author of The Neighborhood, and this is one neighborhood people you don't want to move into, and these are one characters you don't want to know. That's all I'll say about that. On the 27th, I'm interviewing three authors, and I really feel bad because I had to cancel the show 5 times for my husband's surgeries. And, the doctor said you have to do this forever. So on February 27th, I'm going to interview the three authors and the Montague murders. And it's scary because it's three teenage murders, and they're really frightening. And to start March off, none other than award-winning author Talia Connor will be there with the third daughter. So that's just the beginning of March. Oh, I can't forget. And the February 24th, one of my favorite people and your favorite people, R.G. Belsky, will be there with his new book, Silent Victim, with his new character under the name Dana Perry. That's him. I'm allowed to say that, he said. And that's another, it's a fantastic novel, and you don't want to miss it. So if somebody were to put Lisa under the microscope and analyze her, what would her personality come out to be, besides being a little paranoid? Just a drop, maybe.
Well, you know, I think the bottom line is Lisa is a writer, and writers see the world kind of differently from other people. One of my favorite scenes in the book is when Lisa and Purdue are out on this dirt road in the middle of nowhere in northwestern Minnesota, and she's trying to explain to Purdue, you know, what her world is like and how she sees things.
Yeah.
And so she pulls off the road and she asks Purdue, what do you see out there? And he looks out and he sees, you know, the cornfields, and there's a farmhouse in the distance, and some hawks flying around, and that's all he sees. And Lisa says, well, you know, when I look out there, I actually see a body lying in the field, and she talks about seeing a police car coming down the road, and there's a sheriff driving the car, and she knows what's going on in this complicated sheriff's life, and she says that's what she sees. She sees the things that aren't there, and she sees this overlay of drama and mystery and thrills that kind of supersedes the setting, and that's what she's always seen in her life. And I don't know if it's true for other thriller writers, but it's certainly true for me that's always been the way I see the world as well. I don't see simply what's in front of me. I'm always envisioning every setting in the context of dramas and mysteries and what else might be going on in these circumstances. I mean, I can literally remember I was probably seven years old, and my family had a little cottage in Michigan that we would go to on summer weekends and things. And I was taking a walk in one night with my dad on some of the dirt roads, and we passed a house, and there was this sort of ruined area outside the house, and I could see a light on inside this area. For the rest of the weekend, I kept obsessing about, well, what was that? What did that light mean? And what was really going on in there? And I started thinking about spinning out all these elaborate tales of what it meant, what that light really meant. That's just always the way I've seen the world. And I think that's the way, Lisa's personality sees the world as well.
It's funny. We were riding somewhere the other day, and I passed by these beautiful houses, and then some of them were not so beautiful. And I said to my husband, "I wonder who lives in them. I wonder what their secrets are. I wonder if I wrote them in one of my Faces Behind the Stones book, if I could, find out who they are and kill them off, because they did something awful." So seriously. And as I'm looking at these houses, some of them were really mansions, and I go like, "Why does anybody need a house that big?" But the other ones were like small, and some of them look like, ghost-like and scary. And I go like, "That looks like a funeral home. That looks like something. I wonder who lives there." you do, because you just look outside and you wonder.
I wonder what's going on. On the other side of the walls, exactly.
Well, the part that I have to bring out, because this was really exciting, how did you create two novels? You have the novel that she wrote and the novel that you wrote. How did you create the dual novels in the book? Because that was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, the Lisa's novel Thief River Falls obviously is critical to understanding my novel Thief River Falls, and yet Lisa's also a different writer, and she writes in a different style than I do. And one of the things I decided early on was that Lisa would be writing her book in the present tense, and of course I always write my books in the past tense, and it kind of helps separate out the narratives, but there's always kind of this echo that Lisa's book Thief River Falls is sort of worming its way into mine, and I love making those kind of those little shifts and kind of playing with the readers a little bit with this, and I think it's very easy to follow what's going on. There's really only a couple chapters of Lisa's book that actually appear in mine, and yet you feel like there's more. You feel as if Lisa's book is kind of in the middle of everything that's going on.
Well, Lisa's book doesn't exactly end the way your book does. I'm not going to say why, I know. Because that was like, I said, oh, my God. That was oh, my God moment when I said, are you kidding?
That's always what I'm going for.
You did. I said, I wasn't sure, and I said, wait a minute, this can't possibly be. This is like really crazy. And then I'm saying to myself, what really happened? What did she really see? What was the truth about what happened? I mean, seriously. And your mind can play crazy tricks on you, I know. And your mind can make you believe you see one thing when something's happening and seeking another.
You never know what to trust.
Well, you have two separate endings. You have one that she wrote, and then you have a second one. But I'm not going to say the other one, and that which really explains a lot. So, how did you create the dual ending? Because you have like it in two places. You have one. And then you have another one, as you rewrote Lisa's book twice, it looked like to me.
Yes, yes.
That's not bad, people.
Yeah, two for the price of one, exactly. I mean that's ultimately the challenge is finding a way to kind of, you know, wrap up all of the mysteries that are going on and wrap up not only my novel, but really give people a sense of what happened in Lisa's novel and sort of make people understand why it was as successful as it was.
So I'm looking at the book again because I remember there was another part that bothered me. Lisa feels guilty about what happened to Danny. Why?
Well, you know, I think that this is Danny is Lisa's fiance, and I think as people in these circumstances normally do when they lose a loved one, they feel a sense of, you know, responsibility and could I have prevented it and changed it? And I think she feels like, you know, she could have, you know, told Danny not to go and fight the fires in California. I mean, she knew it was. A difficult and dangerous job. And she knew that it was important to him to go and to do it. And she didn't want to stand in his way. And yet, clearly for Lisa, she felt this strong temptation to tell him to stay with her and to not go. And then of course, when he is killed, I mean, she is just overwhelmed by that sense of guilt that if she had said the word, she could have gotten him to stay.
Well, he's a firefighter. I mean, he's not going to not go. That's the thing. So people
they're going to
do what they have to do. Anybody that has to do something. And when you listen to the wildfires in Australia and in California, and they go like, I can't believe they can't figure out a way to prevent that. It's just like it happens all the time, and you know it. And they still rebuild the houses there. They go like, what is wrong with you? Seriously. It's like, how could they, you know, it's almost as if, oh, yeah, these houses are going to burn down. Okay, no problem. And they feel so sorry for the people. That's even scarier. That
that's exactly right.
Yeah. So Lisa, at the end, we're not going to say what happens to her, but Lisa, at the end, does she ever realize that she's got a worth and that she could write and that she can do more? Does she ever realize that she's somebody very, very special with a special talent and that her words on the paper need to matter? Will she continue to write? This is a standalone, right?
This is one of my novels, and I think that readers have come to realize that even when I write my darkest mm-hmm. books, that I try to have sort of a glimmer of hope and faith and optimism at the end of the book. I mean, you look at something like my Jonathan Stride novel, Marathon, which was an incredibly intense, emotional, dark book dealing with some of the worst emotions and things that we can experience. And yet there's this sense of healing and closure that comes, you know, at the end of that book. And that's always what I'm trying to leave the reader with, is at least some sense of healing, even when the characters have been through some very dark things.
Well, we have a few minutes, so you know I'm going to ask this question. What is Stride up to next?
Yes, it's going to be a busy, busy year. Deep River Falls is out, and it's available in hardcover and audio and paperback and ebooks, so people can get it anywhere they want. And it was, you know, it was just amazing because Thief River Falls was selected for Amazon's First Read program, so it was available in ebook throughout January and spent most of January at number one in the U.S. Kindle store. So, I mean, just an extraordinary way to kick off the year. But we're not done there for the year by no means. I've actually got two other books coming out later this year, and technically three, which I'll explain. But people have been asking me, you know, where is Jonathan Stride? Because it's been a couple of years since we had a Stride book. The last one was Alter Ego, and it just took me a little while to get back to Stride, because as you can tell from everything that's getting published, I've had a lot on my plate. But Stride will be back on September 22nd. The name of the new book is Funeral for a Friend. And I just saw the cover art for the book last week. It's just a stunning, stunning cover for Funeral for a Friend. I absolutely love it. So that comes out September 22nd. And then the really fun news is I was selected last year to pick up Robert Ludlum's Jason Bourne series. And so I've written a new Jason Bourne book, The Bourne Evolution. That's coming out this summer. It'll be out on July 28th. So for all of the Jason Bourne and Robert Ludlum and Matt Damon fans out there, they can look for a new Bourne book come July 28th. And as if that's not enough, I released a book last year, an exclusive for Audible called The Deep, Deep Snow. And so it was an audiobook exclusive last year. And Audible just went wild with this book. It hit the New York Times bestseller list. It was number one in Audible for several days. Just a tremendous, tremendous result with The Deep, Deep Snow. I love that book. It's now available in ebook as well. So folks can get, folks who are Kindle and Nook lovers can get The Deep, Deep Snow in ebook right now. And then come October 27th is the release date. We will finally also get a paperback edition of The Deep, Deep Snow. So there's going to be a lot of exciting stuff happening this year.
I want every one of them in print because you know my friend doesn't read on her computer ever. I can barely read my emails on my computer. It has to be in large print. I see very well. It's just that it bothers my eyes. So, and if I have to read a book, I have to be able to write in it and destroy it. I didn't destroy this one. I really caught onto this one really fast. But if I read a book, I have to underline, circle, and just write some notes. So by the time I read the book, I have it memorized. So I write the review. By the way, everybody, my review is on Just Reviews, and my 5 stars are there on Amazon. It's there.
Well, that's fabulous.
And
that's
yeah, I did it at 2:00 this morning. I won't tell you why. I knew that your book was coming out. I knew that Bruce Coffin's book was coming out. And then when I went on Amazon, I went flipped out because Bruce Coffin actually quoted me in the editorial reviews for my review. I was like, I went into the bakery this morning and showed it to everybody. I said, see, I'm famous. What can I tell you? I was like so excited. James Guapando's book came out today. David Putnam's book came out today. And the book Frame came out today. And I said, I have to post all of these. Are these people going to have a fit? And they did, but I did dress first, seriously. So if everybody wants to learn more about you, and whenever you want to send me these books, just I'll add them to my pile. No problem.
As soon as I have art, they'll be in your hands. Yeah.
Are you going to do a Frost Easton by any chance? Because you know I love him too.
Yes, I haven't forgotten about Frost, and I know I left him in some difficult circumstances at the end of The Crooked Street. And my cruel publisher, they wanted me to do a couple standalones next, and so that was how Thief River Falls came about, and I'm doing another standalone for them called The Infinite, which will be out next February. But I will be pushing hard to get back to Frost in the next cycle, that I can hopefully write a new Frost book in 2021. So I have not forgotten about Frost. I know that I still need to resolve the things that were happening at the end of The Crooked Street.
So I'll remind you, no problem. So before we end, where can everybody, this book is going on my shelf, people. Where can we find out more about you and your work? Because I have never read really Robert Ludlum, maybe once or whatever, so this is going to be fun to read that and to review it. That'll be something brand new for me. I'm excited about that one.
It was a lot of fun for me to write. Ludlum's books are so adrenaline filled. And Jason Bourne is such an interesting, iconic, fractured character. He fits actually very beautifully in with the characters I love to write, which is why it was such a good fit. People can find out all sorts of information. They can go to my website at bfreemanbooks.com. That's all one word, bfreemanbooks.com. They can also connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/bfreemanfans, bfreemanfans. And they can find me on Instagram and Twitter at bfreemanbooks. I'm out there. And if they want a sort of fun look at the behind-the-scenes life of an author, they can also sign on to my wife's Facebook page. It's facebook.com/theauthorswife. And so Marcia tells a lot of kind of the behind the scenes stories of the things that go on in our lives. So so they can find me there, and my website dfreemanbooks.com has links, background on all the books and links as to where you can get them. So they can get everything they want to know out there.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Let me tell you, everybody needs somebody like Marcia. Seriously.
That's absolutely true. Well, you talked about
actually,
the fact that a writer needs an editor in their life to really tell them what works and what doesn't, and that's exactly what Marcia does.
My sister was Marcia, and she spelled it the same way. So she had to be special. No, seriously, though, my sister was special, and her name was Marcia, and she used to edit my books. That is so fantastic, and I'm glad she's better. I read her thing on Facebook.
Yes.
I'm glad she's better.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
I'm glad you're better. But I want to thank you so much. This has been fun. Oh, really? I love this book. It's great. If anybody doesn't read Thief River Falls, I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know why you would miss it. It's fantastic. I want to thank you so very much. It's beautiful
thank
outside.
You,
it's actually 45 degrees. It's hot, but it's raining. Oh, shucks. But it's not cold anymore. We had like 0 degrees last week. And I don't know what you had, but we couldn't go. We're expecting a snowstorm on Sunday, so we're going to take it while we can get it. Everybody, thank you so much, Brian. Everybody have a great day, and bye.